Good afternoon, everybody, here from our second podcast of the ITB and the ITB convention in the midst of a busy day already. Joschka Fischer is with me, and I'm glad to have him here. It's such an honor and such a privilege and such a pleasure having him here. And basically, for people from my generation growing up in West Germany, being a baby boomer, he doesn't need any introduction, because I simply grew up with him, and he was such a familiar figure for my generation, like Nina Hagen or Wolf Biermann or Helmut Kohl or so many other people. So he was always on the scene for a West German like me. But I think for the Generation Z and also for our international audience, which comes from far away, we might need a little introduction. Joschka Fischer, you have been a political activist in the 70s. In the Frankfurt area, which was in those days, it was called the Sponti Milieu. Later on, you became a central figure of the Green Movement, which became the Green Party. Later on, you became the first Green Minister in the state of Hessen, where you took oaths in sneaker shoes, which was a big scandal in those days. Hard to imagine nowadays, but in those days it was. And later on, you were the first foreign minister of the first red and green government under Chancellor Schröder from 98 to 2005. If I remember that correctly, when you stepped out of active politics and when you left the parliament in 2006, you said that you were the last rock and roller of German politics, if I quote you correctly.
Yeah.
I still remember that. That's now a long time ago, but you think it's still true for today that you were the last rock and roller in German politics, or you see any other rock and roller?
Well, you have to understand the situation. It was directly after my last election campaign, and it was quite clear that I will leave politics. I was under the impression that I made an election campaign which was based on filling big crowds, marketplaces with big crowds. So for Green, this was very unusual, because usually we don't have the capabilities to mobilize big crowds.
Yeah.
But I could make it. Whether there are rock and rollers nowadays, I don't know.
Okay, so we leave that open to the audience and to the public. I mean, we're living in difficult times. Since last week, times have even become more difficult. And you told me already that you didn't change your speech over the weekend. So this was already in the frame or in the picture as you expected it to come.
I expected it, yes. Definitely after Netanyahu made his visit to Washington, D.C., for me, it was quite clear that something is in the making. And before we had the terrible and bloody repression of the people, manifestations on the streets, people were shot in a short distance, in the eye, and some 10,000 Iranians, very courageous Iranians, were murdered. So it was quite clear something will happen.
Again, going back into history, I remember 2003 when you were still in office at the Munich Security Council and the US was at the brink of the Iraq war in those days. You said into the direction of Mr. Rumsfeld, who was in those days the Secretary of Defense, you say these famous words, "I'm not convinced." Does this, 23 years later, is this a sentence that still hold true, or is it even stronger that you would say, "I'm strongly opposing," or what's your stand on this?
I'm not any longer in the office, so I'm a private citizen. There is a contradiction between international law and the attack. But the international law cannot be the excuse for doing nothing after the terrible bloodshed against peaceful manifestators in Iran. Israel as a case that it will not allow Iran a nuclear weapon and the device to deliver the nuclear weapon, because this would exterminate the state of Israel and the Jewish people. I think it was extremely short-sighted and foolish by the Iranian leadership, especially after the 12 days war last year, which they have lost with Israel, to react in a way which led to self-destruction. International law cannot be used as an excuse for a bloodthirsty dictatorship. There is a contradiction, I see that, but I will be always on the side of peaceful democratic manifestators.
Moving away from this actual conflict and maybe looking at the bigger picture of the last 30, 35 years, I mean, in the days when the Berlin Wall came down, the age of globalization took speed again, and the world seemed to become so open by open tariff agreements, by less visa restrictions. And the tourism industry was an industry who benefited enormously from that. So travel has become so much easier, so more convenient, cheaper, much more than it was in the past. So that was maybe the 90s and the decade after that. So people in many ways are more experienced, more cultural, more multilingual. So we all live in a much more globalized world. But on the other hand, nowadays we work up in a world where people seem to be very biased, very intolerant, very narrow-minded. And we woke up in a hostile environment. And looking at these last 30, 35 years, something went wrong. What went wrong, basically? That the world has not become more tolerant, more open-minded, as we all hoped it to be in the 80s and 90s?
Well, I think there was a certain naivety in this hope. The reality was different. What we see now is the emerging of a new global order based on power, not any longer on rules. A new world order based on the rivalry of global powers like China, like the US, and others. Let's face reality. On the one hand, I think the rise of China and India is changing the world. The rise of the global South is changing the world. And we, as old Europe, are in a decline. If you look to the demographic realities, we are in a serious decline. And at the same moment, we need young people, but we reject any form of immigration. That's a contradiction. My point of view, we have the war in Ukraine, we have now the war in Iran. That's a very insecure world, and the rivalry of the big powers will increase the insecurity. I think tourism industry will have to adjust to this new reality. On the other hand, as human beings, we'll continue to travel, and it will be more than ever in the figures. Chinese tourists are traveling. Indian tourists are traveling. The global South, tomorrow it will be Africa, which will travel. So the world will not stand still.
I mean, you gave a very pessimistic outlook on the present and even more on the future, which is totally justified and totally reasonable. But being here on ITB, maybe spotlighting some sort of optimism, would you think that travel can make a difference in a positive way, in ways of mutual understanding?
I don't know. When I started to travel as a young man, was 18 years, it was France, it was Italy, Spain. These were different countries, like China today. And I think tourism contributed a lot to the recalibration of the Franco-German relationship. Definitely. But on the other side, I don't know whether this will take place on a global level.
I mean, for example, looking at the European Union after 45, that's a success story. The unification of Europe, the reconciliation with France and other enemies of Germany's, and that came, I mean, like things like city partnerships or private traveling. So that made a big difference in that way.
Yeah, but we also learned the everyday life of different people more in details. The cuisine, the kitchen is an important element. And it happens nowadays with Asia. If you look around Berlin, you will see a lot of Vietnamese and Chinese restaurants. And it's not only Berlin, it's everywhere. Asian food is more or less the normality of everyday life in Europe.
The globalized world we live in?
Yeah, it's globalized, but it's also, I mean, I like good food. And I like the experience of knowing new food. It's human.
Obviously. I mean, this morning, my first guest was a peace activist from Palestine, and he's a tour operator working in Palestine, and he's doing joint tours through the West Bank with an Israeli guy. And then he said, okay, you get two sides of the story. We're telling the whole story, the Palestinian story and the Israeli story. There are always two sides of a story. Even true for Berlin, if you look at East and West. So you might get a completely different picture. He was very encouraging in that way. And then he said in the end, it's only the politicians who divide us, you know, and who was putting us apart. And we as a people, we can come together. But you don't see it like that. You don't seem to be that optimistic.
I think the problem would be minor if it would be the politicians. But unfortunately, it's two people are fighting almost since 80 years for the same territory. That's the problem. And it's a very tragic situation.
And there's very little exit to it. There's no exit strategy, not in these days.
I don't see it.
My last question, have you been a devoted traveler through your lifetime? I mean, in your leisure time, not in your business time.
As a foreign minister, I traveled, I think.
And there was a drag.
Some million kilometers.
But that's not pleasant, huh? Is it pleasant or is it?
I always tried to reserve a very short time for experiences and a more detailed knowledge about a country. For example, India.
Yeah.
I was extremely interested also in the history of India. Now, India is a vast country.
It's tremendous.
It's very different, very diverse. And for me, I always try to get an even short impression about the historical legacy of a country.
So even as a diplomat, there was time for that, for doing that?
Well, as a minister, I made my time.
Besides your diplomatic career as a traveler?
Well, I traveled also a lot. When I was a young man, I had no money, so I was hitchhiking in Europe and the Middle East. It was an impressive experience which formed my character.
There's always somebody picking you up. You never get lost when you're hitchhiking.
No.
There's always somebody comes and helps you out of...
Well, you always had friendly people and they picked you up and it was okay. It was fine. The most important element was it was cheap.
It was cheap. It was certainly cheap in those days.
It was in those days there was no... special traveling for young kids in the trains. There were no special tickets and so. But I want to see the world, starting with Europe, and I saw it.
Yeah, and it formed your character, and I think it's experience that stay for a lifetime, right?
Yeah.
Mr. Fischer, thank you very much. It was great having you. It was a pleasure. It was a privilege. Thanks a lot for having us.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.